This is Janet Aldridge. It's May 9th, 2018, and I'm here at Rogue Valley Manor with Earl Croner. And I'm excited to be able to listen to part two of Earl's story. When we left you, you were in college. You had your summer job in Alaska. And where shall we go from there, Earl?
Well, I guess from there, I'll start off by saying I graduated from college in 1953, and when I graduated, I was given a commission as a second lieutenant in the Air Force. That was the time of the Korean War,
right.
And I was assigned to duty to Europe, which is quite fortunate. There was, of course, the Korean War going on, and then also the Cold War going on. And there were two theaters of duty, so to speak. One was obviously to the east, where people were shooting at you, and mine was to the west, where, well, they weren't quite shooting at us, but it was a little tense at that point in time. But anyway, I was flown over, and we landed in Frankfurt in Germany. And that was my first experience being on foreign soil. Uh-huh. It was quite an experience and quite a sensation. The cars were different. The little Beetle was all over in Frankfurt. We came into the Bahnhof or the train station, and which was sort of the center of the town. In fact, most of the towns in Germany were built up around the railroad yards, and of course they have all expanded since then. I was somewhat shocked. They put me up in a hotel in Frankfurt for a couple of days while we were processed. And I was shocked at the number of empty lots. There was a building here, an empty lot, and a building there. I saw another thing that rather impressed me in the area around the Bahnhof. And there were these buildings that were all rather gray, painted gray, and they had giant arrows. They were probably 3, maybe 4 stories high, and they had giant arrows painted on their side that went from the roof all the way down to the floor and pointed to a certain area. And I wondered what in the world that was all about. And I came to find out that that's where the bomb shelters were. So as being next to the bomb yards, there were not many surviving buildings. And it was sort of my introduction to the wages of war. There was quite a bit of that, and it was quite obvious. The streets were clean, there was no rubble or anything. And I do have to, and this was about 10 years after the war, and as being in Germany at that time, I was an occupying troop. This was part of the occupation process. While I was there, the occupation came to an end, and we were all advised not to, to stay off the streets if we could, and certainly not to wear our uniforms. They had no idea exactly what would happen at the end of occupation, but as it turned out, it was it was quite calm and no real problems at all.
No demonstrations.
Kind
of a non-event.
It was a non-event. So
before that time, when you were still officially an occupying force, had you perceived antagonism toward you when you were in uniform?
No. I've thought a lot about that, and I'll talk a little bit about that later as it relates to France and Italy. But in Germany, no, I never felt any occupation, any hostility. I do remember going, and when we landed in Frankfurt, we'd been this is back when airplanes did not travel as quickly as they do now, and we happened to be flying around a hurricane, so it was a several day process. And by the time we got to Frankfurt, we all needed to get our uniforms cleaned and pressed. And I remember going to a little cleaning and pressing place, and where we took our uniforms off, and they started referring to us, our uniforms, as the Luftwaffe. Well, the Luftwaffe was always a sort of a not a nice word or name. So, but that's what we were. We were the Luftwaffe, and that's an introduction to a new culture and of course a new language. I spoke no German at that point. Well, I still don't really, and so it was constantly a challenge. At that point in time, I was surprised at the number of natives, though, that did speak English, and quite well. But anyway, that was my first day, so to speak, in Germany. I do remember the hotel had a bathroom, literally a bathroom on each floor, and the bathtubs are gigantic.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they were just, you know, they come up to you could really put your whole body in there, right, from head to toe if you were so inclined. But and there were a lot of things about that part of it. So anyway, I was transferred then to down to Munich and then on over to a little town called Fürstenfeldbruck, which was a charming little town. It was they had the market there on certain days of the week. I was stationed at the air base there, which had been the headquarters of Hermann Göring during the Second World War. And I was given quarters in what they called the Kilometer Building. And it was called the Kilometer Building because it was a kilometer long. You could go from one end of the building to the other, an entire kilometer, without ever going outside. There were good accommodations. I had a roommate. We each had our own separate bedroom or room, and a common bathroom. But I did enjoy it. Good accommodations, comfortable, warm, and all that sort of thing. My roommate was indeed a very avid skier. I was quite strong as a young man, but certainly not very athletic. So I went skiing with him a number of times, and I was fortunate to do a lot of skiing in Germany, in southern Germany, in Austria, and in Switzerland. I never did become a very good or efficient skier, but it was a lot of fun. In that part of the world, the little towns and villages are just so charming. The scenery in the mountains, the Alps are just gorgeous. We've all seen pictures of the Matterhorn, and so it was quite an exciting part of the trip. I was quite fortunate. Some people fall in with a bad lot. Well, I happened to fall in with a good lot. And I was encouraged to start visiting the towns and the scenery and all the various points of interest in Germany, which I did. And it was just absolutely amazing. My grandfather was an architect, and so I had a great appreciation for the buildings. And so I took a lot of pictures of the buildings because they were just quite magnificent. Some of them, of course, had been damaged. The one thing that was particularly sad to me is the tomb for the unknown soldier, which pretty much every country has, was badly damaged during the war and still was so while I was there. Little things like that are kind of touching.
It brings it home to you.
Yeah, it does. It does bring it home. But anyway,
taken advantage of being there when you could have just stayed in your military.
Well, so yeah, being an officer has a whole lot of advantages. First of all, I had more money than I had ever known existed. And I only worked 40 hours a week. It was such a delight to have that amount of time. Oh, my time's moving on here. I got to move along. But anyway, that was just my time in Germany was quite delightful, quite informative, very just very much of a highlight of the trip. So, but as time went on, the my mission in Europe was to help install a microwave system for the NATO forces. This was a new technology at that point, and so we were building a series of stations from England over to Germany, down into France, and on down into Spain. And it required that there be a relay station basically every 30 miles or so. And so we had to negotiate with each of the countries to obtain a small plot of land where we could put a power station and an antenna. So as this started to come online, I was transferred to France, and I was transferred to a little place called Vernou. It's a small town, and I never did really ever see it. Because it's now it's been combined with other towns, but we were out in the middle of a farm, and about 15 miles out of Fontainebleau, which was the closest base, and that was a NATO base, and about 60 miles south of Paris. We had constructed a new building that was to be the switching center, the headquarters and the switching center for this procedure operation. And it was, as I say, it was out basically just out in the middle of the farm. It had room for two officers, and probably about 40 enlisted men and technicians. It was my responsibility. I was the first one into the building. It was my responsibility to accept the building from the French at that point, which was a little bit more than I was really prepared to do. But anyway, I did. As the sites came online, they brought in 12 telephone operators, and they were put up then in the quarters that had been established for the two officers, of which I was one. At that point, then, not having quarters in the building any longer, I was forced to go out on the local economy and find a some place to live, and I did. I found a little hotel in a town called Saint-Mémé, which is about 10 miles away. Saint-Mémé was right on the Canal de Loire, where it ran into the Seine River, and it was a charming little hotel, sort of. It had 12 rooms. And it had no customers. I had a room, and the room had a sink, and there was a bath. There was a toilet, let me say, down at the end of the hall, and I had a straw mattress.
Oh
my that
goodness.
Was it. There was no heat. Being on the canal, it was always kind of damp and kind of cold. So it was. But I took my meals there, and it was just charming. It was just a wonderful place. They were very good to me. There were some issues with the meals. I took my meals there, and some of the food was new and unique to me. I do recall one breakfast they brought out some poached eggs, but they had been poached in wine, so the eggs were wine colored with the little yellow yolks looking up at you.
Oh dear.
And I couldn't quite handle that, so I found there was another one of the fellows that was living there with me at that point in time. So, but the food was good, and they were very, very compatible, very helpful to me. They took me in and were very friendly.
And the language was that?
Oh, that's where I wanted to go next. So I have a little hummingbird going on out there now.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, I'm sorry. They spoke no English and I spoke no French. I still speak very little French. But anyway, we got along quite well, and they would try to teach French to me. and that was a challenge. I do remember one word, ver. Ver can mean green, it can mean glass, it can mean, oh, I don't, there were two or three other meanings mm-hmm. that the word ver can cover. So, quite frankly, as limited as the facilities were, things could not have really been much better. It wasn't long, though, that I met Madeline. Madeline was one of the telephone operators, and we spent a lot of time together. We were very compatible and had a wonderful time. She was my tour guide and took me and showed me the sights in over much of Western France. And we actually traveled down in, eventually we traveled all across southern France along the Riviera. We went into Spain, and we also went into Italy. And so I just had a wonderful experience of visiting all the little towns and the big cities, seeing all the cathedrals, the churches, and all the points of interest, of which there are so many mm-hmm. in Europe, let alone Germany or France or Italy. They're just, it's overwhelming. So that this went on for, I had spent about a year in Germany, and this I'd spent about a year in France. And as time came to time came for me to rotate back to the United States, I found I had to leave Madeline, and so I did. And so we communicated, and eventually. Now, I did get back to Portland, and I went to work as a clerk for the American Can Company. As I mentioned on my last interview, I was had studied food technology, mm-hmm. and my background in food technology, which had a lot of engineering, a lot of science, did set me up for working for the American Can Company and being able to understand the needs of the customers and the processes involved. But in any case, it wasn't long before I realized I missed Madeline so much that I felt that I couldn't live without her, so I asked her to marry me. And she agreed. So I arranged to bring her over to the country. And she did. She came over and she brought her two children that from a previous marriage. And so we moved into a house that I had rented for us. And it was a bit of a challenge. It's a new transition for me going from a carefree bachelor.
Yes.
Into being a married man with two young stepchildren. Patrick, the boy Patrick was 10, and the girl Sylvie was 7. And so I had rented a house that I thought would be appropriate. Each of the children would have a bedroom, and my wife and I would have our room, and it was quite comfortable. But unfortunately, you don't live that way in Europe. You don't have big houses, you don't have big rooms, and the children were just frightened to death.
Oh.
So that just didn't last very long. It was a part of the transition, of their transition as well as mine. So we very, very quickly moved into a small apartment in Portland, which is now part of the Pearl District. It was pretty close to an industrial area at that time, but all those industrial buildings now are very high-priced condos and rentals.
And then gentrified.
And gentrified. That's the proper word. So, but it was a difficult transition for me. Well, not really for me. I kind of moved into married life quite well. I was really ready to be married. But it was a difficult transition for Madeline because, it was a new culture. Now she was mm-hmm. she was ready. She was happy to be here and she wanted to be here. But it was as we talk about it now, there were so many issues that came up as far as her transition that neither of us were truly aware of. So there was it was difficult at that point in time, although we neither of us really recognized it for what it was. The children had a little bit of trouble too, because they spoke French, but when they went to school, none of the teachers spoke French, nor did any of the children. So they were subjected, as you know, anytime anybody's a little bit different, the children mm-hmm. will taunt them. So there were some issues there, but fortunately they learned English quite quickly. I do have to tell a little story on myself here. This is back in the 50s. I was very much against television at that point in time, and I did not want to have a television in our house. So while we're in the big house, we found that the children were watching television through the windows.
Oh no!
At the neighbor's house. So my stubbornness.
Like the poor underprivileged children.
It was terrible. It was so embarrassing. So anyway, my stubbornness gave way quite quickly to those issues. But as it turned out, things went quite well. We had a very nice life. We moved in, fell in, and combined with my family life, with my mother and with my two brothers, and one of my brothers had at that point in time only three children. He ultimately had five children, but while Madeline and I were together, there were only two children at that point in time. But we have subsequently visited my brothers since then, when Madeline and I have come back together, and we spend time reminiscing with uh-huh. each other the old times, and she remembers them as little children, that sort of thing. Well, actually, that's part of the story that comes a little later. But so we did do some travel in the area, but our main activity was fishing. And I had my car packed with the tent and everything you needed to go camping all the time. And there was just one little spot in the back seat that would hold the ice chest. So on Friday I'd come home, we'd fill up the ice chest, we'd put it in the back of the car, and we'd drive down to what later turned out to be a McDonald's, got a couple of hamburgers, and we drove back to Eastern Oregon. And we spent pretty much every weekend, where the weather was decent and where it was legal, with fishing along the Deschutes, someplace along the Deschutes, or the various lakes in and around Bend, Oregon. So,
uh-huh.
so that was, we had a very, very good and very active life. I did well at the American Can Company, and eventually I became an office manager, and I did so well at that that they offered me eventually a transfer to San Francisco, and I was corporate oriented. I worked for a large company. It was secure. I had a good job, and it was the way I felt I would be spending the rest of my life. So I accepted the transfer. But on the other hand, Madeline's interests and outlook were different from mine.
Mm-hmm.
The structured life of a corporate wife just was not for her. She just didn't fit with her independence or with her free spirit. So with a great deal of reluctance, I did accept the transfer. I did move to San Francisco, and we separated. When I moved to San Francisco, I located in Daly City, which is just a few miles south of the city, and in an area called Daly City, where my brother was living. He also worked for the American Can Company and had been transferred down there sometime before me. We spent a lot of time together and enjoyed our life and the lifestyle of the Bay Area. I'm moving along here pretty quick. I got to move along a little more quickly. Anyway, We did enjoy the Bay Area and all the things that San Francisco has to offer. We've all heard a lot about San Francisco, and it's all true. We enjoyed every bit of it.
It is a remarkable city.
Oh, it is, and there's so much to do there. So, well, anyway, eventually, my brother was transferred down to Torrance, which is part of Los Angeles, and I subsequently was also transferred to Los Angeles, but I settled in West Hollywood. My brother and I, this is my brother Lionel, my brother and I we're some distance apart, but we still managed to get together pretty much every weekend. And I guess we each had a pool at our apartments, but so we were spent a lot of time around the pools. And we did some of the things you do in Los Angeles. I was not at all happy to move to Los Angeles because there is quite a rivalry between San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Right.
And it took me about a year to get used to it, but Los Angeles is such an amazing city. I just grew to love Los Angeles. There's so much there. I've had a wonderful time there. Well, as time went on, Lionel gave up his job at the American Can Company and went into teaching, and I was transferred to Houston as office manager at that location. I do want to mention that while Lionel and I were together, both in San Francisco and in Los Angeles, we frequently had discussions as to how to best run the company. Lionel was in manufacturing and I was in sales, and he felt that he felt his job was to manufacture the cans the most efficient way they could. And he felt that it was sales' job to go out and sell what they manufactured. Sales, on the other hand, thinks that their job is to go out, well, the manufacturing job is to make whatever the customer wants.
I see.
And so there is an unending debate that went on between the two of us.
I would like to have heard those discussions.
Well, they were fun for the most part.
They were, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have to have a sense of humor.
Oh yes. Well, yeah. Well, we did. We were both very compatible and that sort of thing. So anyway, life went on, and I was transferred to Houston. When I was in Houston, I got involved with my neighbor. He had a Corvette, and I before too long had a Corvette too. And although that's not part of the romance tale, but I did. He was involved. He was an anchorman on a local television channel, and he was active in one of the theaters, and invited me to join the group, which I did, not as an actor but as a carpenter. But anyway, so it's there that I met Lynn. Her name is Helen mm-hmm. Roeder. Well, Helen Roeder magaziner, but anyway. So we met and we became very fond friends, and eventually we married. Well, mm-hmm. It didn't take too long for us to get married, actually. But Lynn had been very active in, had just graduated from college. She graduated at the same time her son did. And Lynn at that point in time had been widowed for about a year. She'd lost her husband about a year before to lung cancer. But in any case, Lynn had recently graduated, or is actually in the process of graduating when we met. She had spent a great deal of time at the University of Houston studying art and drama. When we got married, that was tended to be the focus of our activities, and it was again a whole new area of interest to me, art and drama, and we did a lot of theater work and a lot of artwork while we were in Houston. We also did a lot of travel. mostly in the United States. How are we doing on time? All right. I got a half hour yet. So we did a lot of travel at that point in time, and mostly in the United States. So we went into Mexico frequently. We traveled up into Canada. Lynn's son was pretty much a hippie at that point. We shipped him up to Canada to get him away from his friends.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that I continued to work with for the American Camp Company, and eventually they shipped me up to Connecticut to help convert the order entry system to computerize the order entry system. And while we were there, we started we were involved in the art and the theater aspects. And we started our travels at that point in time. And I'll go into that in just a little bit here. But it was in 1977 that Mark's son was 27 at the time, but he was killed in a boating accident over a holiday weekend.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, it was a very sad thing, and Lynn just never really got over that.
Mm-hmm.
This was their depression, and Lynn really never got over that. It was a very difficult time. So
indeed.
From that point on, she continued to be involved. We continued to be involved in the art community, but during the holidays we traveled. There was just no way we could be at home alone over the holiday season. So, as it turned out, we did a great deal of travel. We did 12 trips offshore, and we did about 6 cruises.
Wow.
Let me mention some of the trips that we did. Or do I have them here? Oh, I didn't bring them in. Oh, here they are. Probably the two most outstanding trips that we did. The first one would have been to Morocco. It was an extended tour. We actually went to Spain and Portugal, Spain, and Morocco. And Morocco was so exotic. It was we went to not a little town, it's one of the major towns of Marrakech, which is in a little bit inland. And it was just like out of the Arabian Nights. They have in the marketplace, they have snake charmers, they have acrobats, they have they have secretaries. I had a person write a couple postcards for me in Arabic and send them to my friends.
Mm-hmm.
It was just absolutely charming. It was also the Arabs would come in off the field, and they would have everybody would have a square, probably 3 by 6 feet, that they put a blanket on, and they would sell whatever it is they had to sell, which could be a rusty old knife. It would be whatever they found every place. It was just absolutely amazing. We did spend some time in the Medina,
yeah,
which is the Kasbah, so to speak.
Yes.
We did. We did spend time in the Kasbah in Casablanca. We camped in Casablanca.
In the classic places.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So vibrant,
yeah,
aren't they?
Oh, that was just so exciting. The food was so good, and we learned to eat like an Arab eats.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a technique to that. The other probably most interesting trip was a walking safari in Africa, in East Africa. It was absolutely amazing. We would get up in the morning, have a biscuit, go out for a walk for about 2 or 3 hours, come back and take the rest of the day off. Then about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, when the animals started to move again, we'd go out walking
right
again.
Was this Kenya or Tanzania?
Well, Kenya was our base. We spent the walking tour was in Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
We did do another tour in Kenya. And of course, we did spend time in Cairo. We stayed at Cairo on the way back and forth. And there's a whole other story that goes with Cairo, but I don't think I'm going to have a whole lot of time. Well, but in Cairo, we had a hotel that was right on the Nile, and we asked somebody where's a good native restaurant to go to eat. Well, we found a restaurant that was not too far away. We walked in. On the outside is a kind of like a takeout place. You go past that and there's a sit-down cafe. You go past that, it's the dining room. The dining room is right out of a Humphrey Bogart movie. You know, it's got the lattice walls. It's got the big fans up there. It's just so romantic. And we ate whatever they brought to us. So we asked for a typical meal or whatever it is, and we ate whatever it was that they brought to us, which was unfortunate because that night we both were so sick.
Oh dear. Now,
fortunately, our bathroom was across the hall, and unfortunately, it didn't work very well.
Oh my!
But the fortunate part, it was across the hall. Anyway, we were not too bright because we enjoyed the food so much. We went back to the same place and did the same
thing. No.
So you know, some people just don't learn. But anyway, our life is full of little strange things. But we did some other trips. I guess I'd have to throw in Japan and China were among the others. We made a trip to Guatemala. We did spend some time in Russia. This was during Glasnost. And we did to England and Austria. We had a timeshare in Austria. We in Assisi in Italy. And so we did a number of travel and a number of cruises, all of which are memorable each in their own way. I got to move along here. So in any case, in Connecticut, Lynn started having serious back trouble, and it was unresolved. She also, because of the depression, she also was starting to fail. I knew it was time for us to make other arrangements, mm-hmm. because I felt that my father had died from early onset Alzheimer's or dementia. So I had a sense of what was going on. So we decided it was time for us to move into some sort of support facility. We looked all around Connecticut all over the West Coast, and we eventually settled here in Medford. There's a story that goes with that too, which I think I'll have to pass over here. But in any case, Lynn died in April of 2016. It was a long, troublesome time. She had an essential tremor, which made it actually eventually impossible for her to feed herself. So I had to feed her, mm-hmm. and at that point she refused to go even to any of the venues here at the Manor to eat. So I had to cook and feed her and do the shopping and the housekeeping. So eventually it was beyond my capability to do this because I could never really leave Lynn. So I moved into the residential living area at the Manor. And in 2016, just about 2 years ago now, my wife died. That was a difficult year for me because Lynn died in April, and both of my brothers fell ill, and I was with each of them when they died in October, 3 days apart.
What a difficult time!
It was a tough year, you do what you have to do.
You do.
Know?
It's a blessing to have them, but still.
Well, I had always stayed in touch with Patrick, with Lynn's son, and he was my stepson, so I always stayed in touch with him. And so when Lynn died, he passed that information on to his mother, Madeline, who was living, had been living here in Medford for about 45 years.
So did you know she was here? Or?
I knew she was here, but we never communicated. Mm-hmm. She knew I was here, and I knew she was here, but I didn't know where she was or anything like that. But anyway, so when after she heard about that Lynn had passed, she sent me an email and said, would you like to get together? And I said, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't long. We got together and started reminiscing the old times. And we soon found that we fell in love again. We rekindled the old romance. And we found because we had 7 years together as a married couple. Mm-hmm. Our value systems are pretty much the same. We are still very different. Madeline is still very independent and very very active. And I'm hard headed.
Sounds like a perfect match.
we are in fact a perfect match. We found that we both wanted each other and we needed each other. Mm-hmm. And so we've been together for about a year and a half. And I started listing the things we've done in this last year and a half, and it's amazing. We did go down to Sonoma where Madeline's son lives. For Christmas, that first Christmas we were together, and her daughter came over from Hawaii, and her granddaughter came up from Los Angeles, and her grandson came over from Santa Rosa. So we had just a wonderful time all together over that Christmas. We did get up to Portland, as I mentioned before, to visit time with my family and reminisce about times of old. And we also went down into Central California and visited Lynn's family. She has several nieces and nephews down there. So we've been on the go, and we still are. We're planning to leave in about a month now for a three-week tour of France. We're going to go back to our old stomping grounds.
Oh my goodness! How wonderful that'll be!
Oh yeah, we're going to spend several days there, trying to looking up the old places that we used to visit, and we're going to go over to visit some of her family in Angers, and then on over to La Rochelle, and then we're ending up with an 8-day cruise in the Bordeaux region. So after that we'll come back and collapse.
That is something to look forward to.
But they're each and every day seems to be a story and excitement. It's been a very very full life. I've been loved and I have loved. What more can I say?
Thank you, Earl. I couldn't add anything to that. It was wonderful.
Oh.